The Drive is brought to you on demand by Assignar Construction Operations Software. Visit keepbuilding.com for a free demonstration and see how much your business can save.
The Drive is right now.
Did you catch that Zach didn't actually bet all the games on the pick'em this past week?
That's not possible.
He didn't do it.
He didn't bet on all of them. Huh?
Stokely outed him today.
Oh, I did hear them talking about that. That could have been an issue for you because you were only down by one. And had you known that, what would you have done?
I don't know.
Because remember, we changed our picks at the very end. You don't have an individual bet with him, though, do you?
No, I'm just the team thing here.
Listen, as far as I'm concerned, Stokely can take another week off. Hey, are we going to just keep going with their music for the rest of the show? Or are we still making picks? What's going on here?
Review something. So when I'm listening to the keys of the game, they say they got to do everything better. Everything.
Yeah, right.
They literally listed everything.
Uh-huh.
And then they pricked the Broncos to win.
No.
Did I catch that right?
Zach didn't pick the Broncos.
Oh, he did?
Zach took the Raiders.
Oh, he did take the Raiders. Oh, okay. All right.
Hey, listen, if Stoke wants to take another week off, he finally got a victory against me in Pick'em, so I haven't been able to pay him because he took a week off. So, listen, you want to take another week off? Hey, feel free. It's a pretty good schedule, by the way. Just show up on Friday. I like that.
Yeah. Yeah, that works out well.
Yeah.
That's a fun deal. All right, so Zach said they have to do everything better, and then he picked the Raiders to win.
That's right. Yes,
okay.
Yes. Zach took the Raiders, although Stokely did take the Broncos, so.
Okay. I was coming in a little hot today from Dove Valley.
I was a little worried about you.
I know. Fridays make it interesting. Everything was just running like a little bit late this week for whatever reason over there, so, I don't know. I wanted to see if Tom McMahon would fall on the sword. He did.
Okay, that's good.
He did it again today. Tom McMahon is...
How many times can you fall on the same sword before it starts to hurt? Like, at what point are you no longer alive when you fall on the sword?
We should play
not
Tom
McMahon. I'm encouraging that, but you know.
No, but it'd be funny to play a Tom McMahon press conference just like you have the sword sticking into his gut.
Fish wound.
Yeah. He was back to it this week. He took a week off last week, but he's back.
Good for him, dude. He's got a lot of scars.
He was trying to explain the penalties, and he went over every single penalty they've had on special teams to explain why every single penalty that has been called on special teams has been called.
Yeah, no wonder you were late. Are you kidding me? That's going to take an entire lifetime.
They really don't believe that Draymond Jones did anything wrong on the field goal thing. They really, I mean, he wouldn't say it, but it was pretty obvious the way he was saying it.
Okay. You put two hands on the back of the offensive lineman's back. It seems like that's the definition of the rule to me.
As Zach Stevens was like, I have all those penalties. And he goes, it's just like, boom, boom, boom. We'll have to play it a little bit later.
What happened on the kickoff return?
He went over.
Punt return?
Punt return. There you go.
PAT.
It's a hard sound effect. Well, you got to pull it.
We got a delay on this thing, or
what? You got to pull it out of your gut and then put it back in.
That is true. Yeah, it gets stuck in there.
One of the more overwhelming things that are going on, like we heard Ed Donatell do this.
I'd like to start off by congratulating Mike Shanahan for his extraordinary accomplishments and contributions to the Denver Broncos organization. And he's going in the Ring of Fame this week, and it's well-deserved. Back-to-back Super Bowls. You know, what a cutting-edge coach. And I'll always be grateful to the 5 years I spent with him.
Well, that's a big part of the story this weekend for Mike Shanahan.
This is a big weekend. You know, this feels like it's the Shanahan weekend. I don't know inside that building if they're approaching it the same way that we are as a station, that as listeners, as fan base. Hey, this is fun. This is awesome. You know, Mike's got he's got a moment tonight where they're going to unveil his name. Tomorrow, he's got a party at his house. Really fortunate I'll be there. Can't wait. I've got teammates that are flying in from all over the country. And it's going to be a long, extended weekend of celebration for the greatest coach in franchise history. That's what you got here.
I know there's always like a alumni sort of weekend. And I don't know if they've that might have been different last year with the COVID stuff. But I don't know if they're combining the alumni weekend with this, with Mike Shanahan's thing, or that it's all just one thing. But inevitably it is, because so many people are coming back, right?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I really do think that Shanahan invited just about anybody he ever coached to come to his house. Fortunately, he's got a big house. we might all be able to actually fit in it. So, that's going to be awesome. You know, I've been kind of just going down memory lane personally, because what Mike Shanahan meant to me personally and my life, not just my career, but my life. I mean, you know, that dude, he not only took a chance on me as an undrafted free agent, brought me in, saw something in me. He committed to me. He everywhere I went was either with Mike, with Kyle, or with one of his disciples. So I came in to the Broncos, played 1 year for him. He gets fired in the next season. Okay, so I play 1 year with Josh. I get cut in my third training camp. I go out to Seattle with Jeremy Bates. They traded for me because Jeremy Bates was the offensive coordinator. He had me in Denver. Okay, after I'm done in Seattle, I get a call from Mike. He's like, "Ty, you want to come play for Washington?" Like, well, of course. So end up out in Washington for 4 years with Mike. Then I go with Kyle out to Atlanta, and then back here to Denver with Gary Kubiak. Literally every single thing I did in the NFL was because of Mike Shanahan. So I mean, to say that I owe that man is not an appropriate word. Mm. Like that guy defined my career. He created my career. Mm-hmm. I don't even know if I would have had a career if it weren't for Mike Shanahan. So I just feel like this is an incredible weekend for me to be able to go be a part of this and hang out with them. We're going to have Coach on the show here at 3 o'clock.
Yeah.
Be able to check in with them and go down some memory lane. But I got all kinds of stories, and today it's going to be a little bit of story time of Tyler's experiences with Mike.
So. You know, it's interesting with Mike, because you came in, I think there's a variety of stages with Coach Shanahan.
Sure.
From the assistant coach sort of stage, to the head coach stage, mm-hmm. to unfortunately the departure stage.
Yeah.
And you came in actually in the latter half.
That's right.
of his career here.
Which was weird though, because you know, when I got here, nobody was sitting here thinking like, boy, coach is on the hot seat. No, dude, we were playing good football. We had to win one of our last three games and we were in the playoffs.
Right.
We didn't do it. I don't know how we didn't do it. We had Jay Cutler. We had Brandon Marshall. Like, things were looking great. Tony Scheffler, the offense was Eddie Royal, Ryan Clady. Seriously, think about that offense.
Yeah.
Think about how optimistic everything was. So when I was playing for Mike, it's not like I thought to myself, boy, we better win this year or else he's not going to be here. We lost in San Diego, and next day I get a call that coach got fired. Dude, was not even remotely on my radar that Mike Shanahan might have been fired. Nobody would have thought of that. Heck no.
I'll never forget it, man. It was crazy. You know, at the time, myself and Oren Lameno were actually filling in for this show for afternoons or something. I don't know. We were filling in, and we were speculating, like going into a break. We said, geez, I don't know, man. Is at the end of the road for Mike Shanahan. We were speculating it. We go to commercial. We come out of commercial. The news broke during the commercial. Like, he's been fired.
Well,
I'll just never forget it.
That's funny.
It was surreal.
Those conversations, because I'm telling you, was not on my radar. All that I saw was an offense full of youth, full of optimism. Like, if you could build an offense from scratch, think about those names. Seriously.
Yeah.
Jay Cutler.
Yeah.
Brandon Marshall. Tony Scheffler. Ryan Clady. Eddie Royal. Me. Everything felt like, okay, we're just moving towards the future. I felt like I was playing for an icon that was in the middle of his heyday.
Yeah, I don't want to dwell on the negative stuff, but I'll just never forget it, that's all.
Sure.
And then the press conference was crazy.
Yeah.
Because I've never seen anything like it. It was Mike had been fired, and he spent an hour answering questions in the big room
right.
at Dove Valley, packed. And then he walks out, and Pat Bowlen walks down. It was the last time Pat Bowlen took just open questions.
Sure.
Ever.
Sure.
And it was just like, you really sat there and you could not believe this had happened.
Yeah.
And, you know, hindsight being unbelievably 2020, it shouldn't have happened. They should have. Maybe,
What would you give for that optimism? Like to have a season like that, it ended poorly. All you need to do is win one
right.
or three games.
Right.
But look at the future. Look at what you've got in front of you, right? And you know, as a Denver kid, getting to play there, my first year, it was everything. Dude, so I went into the draft. Obviously, I wanted to get drafted. Of course, I wanted to get drafted. And when I didn't get drafted, that hurt a little bit. But it was incredible to be able to say I was a part of things that I watched growing up.
Well, let's get to that story because it's a crazy story.
Yeah.
About what that was like and what happened with Mike. And the idea of rivalry, too, is big. Especially Vic was joking about Mike today. In a good way, like, there's reasons why Mike had a heated rivalry with the Raiders. You know, that...
Sure. Because he hates them.
So we'll dig into all of that. It's The Drive on Denver Sports Station, 104.3 The Fan.
It's a Bud Light Football Friday. Bud Light, official beer sponsor of the Denver Broncos. Denver Sports Station, 104.3 The Fan presents The Drive with Tyler Palumbus and D-Mac.
Yeah, Mike's a friend of mine. We stay in touch occasionally, you know, mostly through text. You know, but Mike's had a great impact on the game. Obviously, had a great impact on the Broncos organization. First as an assistant, then as the head coach. And, you know, his legacy has lived on through a bunch of these coaches. You know, obviously his son, Sean McVay, LaFleur in Green Bay, Stefanski in Cleveland, didn't coach with him, but he coached under Gary, who Gary coached under Mike, and he's doing the same stuff. And it's all around the league. So Mike's been retired, hadn't been active the last few years, but his stuff is still active.
I think he's been a little bit active. Something tells me he's been active out there in San Francisco.
Is that right?
You know, I've
what can you share? What can you not share?
Oh, I mean, I don't think it's a secret that Mike has certainly got a key card, right?
Okay. All right.
I don't think it's a secret that Mike certainly has got the ability to watch film if he wants to watch film, right? And I don't think it's a secret that Kyle respects his dad. So I'm not saying that Mike is running the show by any means. Of course he's not. No, it's Kyle's show. Mike is just he's someone for Kyle to lean on, and he does. He does lean on him.
What happened on draft day?
Dude, so I mean, I went into draft day, of course, hoping I would be drafted. And I had high hopes. I was hoping I would get drafted in the fourth round, maybe sixth round, somewhere in that ballpark. Matter of fact, I got a call in the fourth round from the Seattle Seahawks. They said, "Hey, Tyler, we're next up on the clock. Congratulations, you're going to be a Seattle Seahawks."
Oh, my gosh.
So my family, we celebrate, you know, pop the champagne. Everybody's hugging each other, going around the room.
All
of a sudden, I look at the ticker, and it says, "Seattle Seahawks, select Red Bryant." And I'm like, huh?
Why would they
do that? Huh? So they called me immediately, and they're like, "Oh, we're so sorry. Like, we wanted to get Red later, but we found out that another team was going to select him on the next pick. So we ended up taking Red, but don't worry, we're gonna take you later on." And so they ended up calling me again in the sixth round. That's a whole different story. I'll tell that story one day. It was a hot mess. Bottom line is, I get to the sixth round, and at this point, once you get to the sixth, seventh round, you honestly are, your agents will tell you, that you're honestly better off if you go undrafted at that point, because you can kind of select the destination, find a good fit for you. I still wanted to get drafted because I just wanted to be able to say I was drafted. I did.
Of course.
Right? So we get to the sixth and seventh round. Now my phone is buzzing off the hook, man. It is nonstop. Teams are calling me. They're trying to set up just information, trying to feel each other out, see who else is interested in me. So draft ends, and I've got three phones that are working. Turns out I ended up getting offered a deal by 31 out of the 32 teams. I could have played on, or I could have tried out basically on literally any team in the NFL.
Who was the team? That
Jacksonville did? Jaguars.
Up yours,
yeah,
Jacksonville.
Forget you, Jack. So what ended up happening for me is I was in a great spot because I got to leverage myself and I got to negotiate. Normally when you're a free agent, you're just hoping for one or two teams that'll be interested in you. But I was able to turn that into what was really the equivalent of like a fifth round signing bonus. So, I got it narrowed down to three teams. My dad and I had done this huge research project before the draft, just in case I didn't get drafted, tried to figure out what teams had a need for a tackle, what might be a good fit, right? So when it comes down to it, we'll be prepared to make an educated decision. So I got it narrowed down to three teams. It's the Oakland Raiders, believe it or not, the Denver Broncos, and the Indianapolis Colts. Yeah. Those were the three teams that I saw a potential need for an offensive tackle. So now about 20-30 minutes have gone since the draft, and I've got three head coaches on the phone at the exact same time. My mom's cell phone, she's got Tony Dungy. The house phone, we've got Mike Shanahan. My dad's cell phone, we've got Tom Cable. Okay. Talk about an overwhelming moment. Are you kidding me? Yeah. I got three head coaches on the phone. They're all trying to negotiate. They're all trying to explain why I would be a good fit for them. Mm-hmm. Of course, as a hometown kid, I want to go to the Denver Broncos, but I also want to make a team, right?
Yeah,
and I don't know, honestly, on paper, looking at those three teams, the Broncos had the worst fit. They had a very solid backup tackle in Eric Parris that I knew had been around. He'd played. He was a swing guy, mm-hmm. and he'd been productive. So I didn't really like my odds with the Denver Broncos. I get on the phone with Tony Dungy, and I'm like, hey, Coach Mike, Coach Shanahan, can I put you on hold for a second? I want to talk to Tony Dungy. Are you kidding me? What? I'm nervous. I just put Coach Shanahan on hold. Like, mm-hmm. what am I doing? Go talk to Tony Dungy. Tony says, Tyler, I don't know how much you know about me, but I'm a man of faith. I'm a man that likes to consider my word means something. And when I say something, I mean it. I'm going to tell you right now, the reason you should come to the Indianapolis Colts is because you are on my football team. This is no tryout. You're not coming in here to be a camp body. You will be on the Indianapolis Colts. So
on the 53,
on the 53 man roster. Yeah. So I say, wow, holy cow. Okay, thank you so much. Give me just 1 second. I put Tony Dungy on hold. I tell my dad, I'm like, hey, I guess I'm going to the Colts. He just promised me a spot on the roster. I gotta get Mike Shanahan back on the phone. Tom Cable, I gotta tell him I'm going to the Indianapolis Colts. And mm-hmm. so my dad, you know, wisely, was thinking it through, and he's like, well, why don't you just tell Coach Shanahan that?
Sure.
Just tell him what he said. See what he's got to say, right?
Yeah.
Because of course I want to be on the Denver Broncos. So I pick up the phone and I'm like, hey coach, I think I got to go to Indianapolis. I've got a great opportunity out there. You know, I'd love to play for the Broncos, but Coach Dungy just promised me a roster spot on the 53. Mike said, Tyler, are you kidding? You absolutely are on this team. Matter of fact, I'll prove it to you with the money. And so he ups the offer, gives me the most money of any of the teams. It turned out to be a very significant signing bonus, much more than any other free agent. It wasn't even close. And he said, you know, I don't know exactly what Tony Dungy told you, but you will be a Denver Bronco. Yes, I view you the exact same way. So got on the phone with Tom Cable, and I'm just like, hey, see you later. Thanks. I got back on the phone with Tony Dungy.
Yeah,
that was much more difficult
because
not only was he respectable, but he was kind. He made the initial offer.
Sure.
It was really, really difficult. But I just explained it to him, and I said, you know, Coach, I can't tell you how grateful I am for you to believe in me like that and to tell me that. But I am from Denver. I would love to be a Denver Bronco. Of course, I'd love to be a Colt. Maybe it'll happen one day down the road if I get cut. Sure. I hope you feel the same way about me. But I'm going to take up Coach Shanahan on his word. So got back on the phone, told Mike, hey, let's go. I'm a Denver Bronco. Thank you. And from that point forward, I was attached to Mike Shanahan's hip everywhere I went.
Because
of Mike Shanahan.
What was your previous relationship with him, though?
Zero.
Never really?
Didn't know him.
So I
did know John Elway just a little bit. John Elway wasn't involved, though.
You did not know.
So Mike did bring that up. He was aware of me. He knew I was a Cherry Creek kid.
Yeah.
Kyle, I missed Kyle by 2 years in high school.
Oh, okay, okay.
So I never overlapped with Kyle.
Gotcha.
I really had no reason to have a relationship with Coach Shanahan at all,
right.
Other than the fact that we were both Creek kids.
Right.
You know, he did say that. He said, you know, you went to the same high school as Kyle. Mm-hmm. I've been following your career. I'm well aware of you. Let's keep this thing going. Let's keep you local.
So you didn't have a relationship with him, but he had kept tabs on you for a while. He had an unusual...
Or somebody showed him my bio.
I thought he paid attention.
I do think because I went to Cherry Creek,
right,
he was aware of who I was.
Of course.
Sure.
Of course.
Yes,
of course.
Yes, yes.
Well, we'll dig deeper into the stories, and we'll have Coach Shanahan on with us at 3 o'clock as it's the Ring of Fame. Where's the Hall of Fame?
Right.
Where does that come up? We'll dig into all of it. John Klain with the latest in NFL news comes up next.
It's a Bud Light Football Friday. Bud Light, official beer sponsor of the Denver Broncos. Denver's sports station, 104.3 The Fan presents The Drive with Tyler Palumbus and D-Mac.
John Clayton is our senior Broncos writer for DenverFan.com. He joins us now courtesy of Twin Peaks, Eats, Drinks, Scenic Views. We'll get to John's column about Vic Fangio and his honesty in a second. But first, John, in covering Mike Shanahan, what do you think his legacy will be, and how has that matriculated down the coaching tree?
Well, I mean, the big thing is, I mean, he was aggressive. He won. But I think the greatest legacy he has is up to today, because he was so far ahead of the game as far as his running offense, as far as his offense. Because, again, what you're looking at, like even this year, more teams, Seattle, Atlanta, I mean, you name it, they've gone to the Shanahan offense. And certainly this is the Kyle Shanahan offense, but it's still a byproduct of the Mike Shanahan offense. You know, and he and Bobby Turner have done such an amazing job of setting up a run game that was different but worked so well. And, I mean, what the legacy still was, one, his success in Denver, but two, his ability to carry through and have an offense that, you know, now is, what, 30 years old and is still up to date.
John, why is Mike Shanahan not in the Hall of Fame?
Because it takes time. I mean, and I'll explain this because, first off, I was the one, thanks to Will McDonough, who kept on pushing for contributors and coaches to be in a separate category, because players are always going to beat out coaches. Okay, so now what ends up happening is we finally got it a couple of years ago, and now we're starting to go through the list to get the coaches in there. So, like, Dick Vermeil was able to make it this year. I think Mike Holmgren has a good chance to make it next year. But we're playing catch-up. Like, a lot of things we do in the Hall of Fame, you know, we're playing catch-up. But I was the one who was the biggest advocate, because Will McDonough, who I sat next to at the Hall of Fame meetings when he was alive, told us this was so important to do. And fortunately, the Hall of Fame listened, and so now we have the coaching category. So now it's a matter that one coach can get in each year, and so you know, it's just now a matter of time, because he will get in as long as we can keep that coaching category. If we have Mike Shanahan going against a player, well, then Mike Shanahan's not going to win.
Just a quick 6 degrees of separation for you, John. My father played baseball with Will McDonough when they were both at Northeastern College in Boston back in the day. So,
wow.
How about that one?
Yeah.
But
the question was, because, you know, knowing Will so well, was Whitey Bulger on that team?
He could have been. You never know. You never know what was going on there.
My wife went to high school with Whitey Bulger.
Yeah, because remember, the reason I say that is Whitey Bulger just lived right down the street from Will.
Who knows what was going on in Southie back in those days? I'm sorry,
my wife went to high school with Whitey Bulger's nephew.
See,
like that.
We could do this all day.
Yeah, that's right.
It's a circle. Yeah, just goes. Okay, John, your column on DenverFan.com is, you respect that Vic Fangio's being honest. What stands out to you about that?
Well, what stands out is that really, you know, being this is my first year of covering a team like this, is that certainly I'm reliant on the press conferences to be able to understand, you know, what's advancing as far as the team. And you notice that he doesn't mince words as far as some of the issues on the team. I mean, you saw it in the preseason when he said that the special teams were a problem. I mean, and like, for example, just two days ago, when he came out and he said that, we're having problems on third downs. And so sure enough, I look at it, and he's right. I mean, what, they're 28.4% on third down conversions on offense, which is worst in the league. They're like 43% on allowing third down conversions. And so it's like, you love that type of honesty. But really, when you look at just about every press conference he has, there's like one or two or three answers that a lot of coaches won't get into. You know, like, for example, if somebody's not playing well, he's never going to call a guy out publicly. But what he's going to do is say, nope, he needs to play better. He needs to play better. And I just appreciate that honesty, because it, you know, really points to, you know, when things aren't going right, you know, what's going wrong and what needs to be fixed.
We think that the Broncos have nothing to – they have everything to lose in this game. I'm trying to figure out how to say that, Tyler. Like, John, like, everybody expects the Broncos have to win this game. Does that put a kind of an absurd amount of pressure on them? Because everybody will understand the Raiders losing. It feels like all the pressure's on the Broncos because of this week.
I would agree. Yeah, because, again, what you're looking at with the Raiders right now is that they've got to be, you know, kind of mentally mystified because of the coaching change and trying to make the adjustment in a week, you know, now having Greg Olsen call the plays, not John Gruden, not having John Gruden's leadership and stuff on the sidelines. And, of course, you're right. I mean, the pressure's all on the Broncos because, you know, if they drop three in a row, then all of a sudden things are going to be problematic because, you know, you figure that at some point Kansas City's going to bounce back, and you know that the Chargers right now have a great chance to win the division. And so it's like, this game, there's so much on the Broncos that they cannot afford to lose.
Appreciate it. John Clayton, our senior Broncos writer for DenverFan.com, courtesy of Twin Peaks, Eats, Drinks, Scenic Views. James Merrillat would take issue. There must be some interesting infighting at DenverFan.com. Because
John's the senior writer. So,
John is, right. For sure. But I see James' take is that Vic just constantly throws everybody under the bus.
You know, you get in a spot like this when things are going bad, and I don't know what you want out of a guy. I don't know what you want out of their pressers. You want them to be honest. Okay, when they're honest, then they toss somebody under the bus. When they don't toss somebody under the bus, well, then they're falling on the sword and they're not being accountable for the actions. It's just win games, right? Win games, and then you don't have to deal with stuff like this. But when you're losing, you've got a culture that people are going to overanalyze this stuff. I guess I would lean closer towards James than I would to John Clayton, to be honest with you. I don't want my head coach up there exposing everything. Like, hey, we don't need to draw further attention to the problems that are going on inside of our building. Like, we're going to handle it. We'll handle it internally. And trust me, I'm going to call him out. I'll be up there in front of the team meeting. I'll call the fellas out. Mm-hmm. But what good is it going to do for me to go talk about every player's problems in a public forum?
What do you think the legacy of, like, where do you see the real impact of Mike Shanahan's legacy in the NFL right now? Like, the Niners would be kind of too obvious, right? But where else? Where else do you see it?
Well, there's a lot. I mean, basically the entire youth movement that's going on in football right now is from Mike Shanahan. The Sean McVay effect, the Kyle Shanahan effect. You've got the LaFleur. All those guys were on our staff out there in Washington. Think about that for a second.
Wow.
Those three coaches were all offensive assistants out in Washington when we were not even a good football team. But that shows you just how important it is to have good players because, of course, Mike Shanahan was a great coach in Washington. Mm-hmm. Of course, he had a great staff. He's got three young coaches that are really the shining stars of the NFL right now. They were all nobodies, just assistants, wide receivers coaches, tight ends coaches. Matt LaFleur, he was like a grad assistant, right? He was like a nobody. It's just amazing all the young guys that are out there.
And Mike had final say on things, right?
Of course.
Okay, so.
Well, that's a funny question, actually. In theory, Mike has final say, and yes, Mike is like the godfather of NFL stuff, but that's part of what went wrong out in Washington was that, no, at the end of the day, we had an owner who tried to have the final say, and we had an owner who allowed a quarterback to walk in there, set an off-season meeting with the owner, the quarterback, and the head coach. And Robert goes up there in this meeting, and he draws up on this whiteboard a list of plays. He draws an X through him, and he says, nope, never running him again. And the owner says, if he doesn't want to run him again, you're not running him again. And Mike says, are you kidding me? You think you're going to tell me what I'm calling? Like, this punk little kid's going to tell me what I'm going to call, the stuff that I've been successful with? So, really, although Mike should have had final say, Dan Snyder, he didn't allow it sometimes.
So, is RG3 a Dan Snyder pick and Kirk Cousins a Mike pick?
100%. Kirk Cousins was a spiteful pick. Who drafts two quarterbacks in the same draft?
I think it's kind of brilliant, actually, but
It wasn't done for that purpose.
It wasn't.
It was done to say, hey, you got your guy, now I'm going to get mine.
Okay.
And we'll see who's going to be right.
That is awful, actually.
Of course.
Philosophically, if everybody was on the same page about it, it could be somewhat brilliant. But if it's just out of I'll show you. That's you know, pretty horrific.
I don't have time right now. We'll break it down a little bit more here in a minute. But Mike did go all in for Robert. So although it was not his pick, he went all in and he changed everything that he had ever been for Robert to be successful. And the stuff that made Robert successful his rookie year, Robert went up there, put it on the whiteboard, said, I'm not doing it anymore. I want to be a pocket passer.
Okay. We will have Coach Shanahan on at 3 o'clock. I got to run this past you. I think we could see something very interesting happening in the Broncos secondary based on what we were allowed to watch at practice today.
Oh.
I think. But I'll run it past you coming up next.
It's a Bud Light Football Friday. Bud Light, official beer sponsor of the Denver Broncos. Denver's sports station. 104.3 The Fan presents The Drive with Tyler Palumbis and D-Mac.
You know, a little bit, but I mean, Mike had, you know, dealings with the Raiders, you know. They tried to stiff him on the money, so. Yeah, he had a reason.
I think they did.
That was earlier today with Vic Fangio pointing out those rivalries, Raiders, Mike, you know, and the whole Mike and the Raiders and the money thing is just such a well-known, you know, thing.
Oh, yeah.
That's just out there.
Well, they never paid him. Never got his money. So guess what? I bet he still doesn't like him.
It's like, Vic, well, the Raiders, they stiffed him on the money. All these years later. It's still like
it's a thing.
It's a thing.
Hey, if you got stiffed on your money, would you ever forgive someone?
No.
Right.
No. But Mike made it a, you know, he really wanted to beat the Raiders. Well, we'll ask him about it coming up at, I mean, hey, this had to be done on purpose, right? I mean.
Yeah, there's no question that the Raider rivalry, it was created in large part because of Mike Shanahan. Like just because of who he was and players, you know what? We know what our coaches have been through and we know what games mean something extra for them. Mm-hmm. And sometimes it turns into something that turns into a lifelong rivalry for the franchise.
Yeah. I hate the Raiders. It's kind of quirky why I hate the Raiders, because the first football team I was ever a fan of was the Broncos, because my dad moved our family out to Steamboat Springs for 1 year of my life. But it just happened that that year was when the Broncos went to their very first Super Bowl. Orange Crush, Tom Jackson, Randy Groshart, all that crew, right? And you just hated the Raiders. And I loved Lyle Alzado. So I do remember as a kid when Lyle Alzado went to the Raiders, Tyler. I mean, I didn't understand it. I'm a kid. I thought he wanted to be. I hate it. I couldn't stand it. And I became a Patriots fan. And it was in a preseason game that I'm forgetting his name. Mel Blunt, I think, but paralyzed Daryl Stingley in a very cheap hit. You know, this is way back. So I always view the Raiders as despicable.
You know what's sad?
I always hated the Raiders.
Of course I feel the same way. I'm native. I grew up here. That's what I watched as a kid was the Broncos-Raiders rivalries. Yeah. That's what I thought of when I got into the NFL. And to some degree, when I first got into the league, that rivalry was still ongoing. I honestly wonder if anybody in the Denver Broncos locker room has got a spite towards the Las Vegas Raiders. I don't know if there's a single player that has got a spite towards them. It kind of came back for a little bit because of Aqib. You know, Aqib and Michael Crabtree.
Crabtree,
listen, that was funny. It stole the dude's
Time was funny.
It was funny the second time.
Well, second time,
I felt bad for Crabtree the second time. Like you let him do that to you twice.
Yeah, but it really stung the Broncos in that the second time because Aqib got booted and the receiver, cornerback guy, whatever his name was.
Turned into an all-out melee. I was working that game. I was on the sideline on the broadcast, and honestly, that fight happened like 3 feet from me. I almost got caught up in it.
It'd be all right had the Broncos won that game, but they lost that game. You can make the argument they lost that game because the kid wasn't in the game. But I know what you're saying.
But this league is so just mercenary in nature that, shoot, how many Colorado boys do we have?
Just two that I know.
Purcell and Dalton, anybody else?
I think that's it.
Okay. Anybody besides those guys, do they know the history in the NFL between the Broncos and the Raiders? Maybe a little bit, but do they care about that history?
Right. I don't know. Probably not, because when they were younger, it really was the Chargers that were giving the Broncos fits, not the Raiders. So my guess is we'd have to ask Dalton and Mike, you know. But my guess is probably not. I think you probably go back because, you know.
Of course. I grew up. I watched it.
Yeah.
That's what I felt. And when I played the Raiders, guess what? I felt that way.
I bet you hated Nebraska a heck of a lot more than you hated the Raiders, though.
Well.
It's a guess.
Of course that's true. Of course that's true. But the only team in the NFL that I felt like a real spite towards was the Raiders.
Okay.
That's it.
All right.
You know, even when I was playing out in Washington, and you've got the rivalry between Cowboys and Washington, that's one of the longest, most how much history is behind that
Tons.
Game, right?
Tons.
Ridiculous.
Yep.
But you didn't feel it as a player. It's just another game.
Right. Seattle, they got any rivals? I mean, got anybody hate there in Seattle?
Not really.
No, you're just too, you know, you're all wearing your beanies and everything. It's good.
Peace and love, man.
Banjo will, just a couple things. Here's about Kareem and Melvin.
Kareem will be questionable with his back, and Melvin will be questionable with his hip, as is Aaron Patrick with an ankle.
Okay, Patrick's a special teams guy. I did see Kareem and Melvin practicing today, so they looked okay. But the real interesting story this week in the secondary is Ronald Darby.
I don't think so. We're going to get him in there. He's going to play.
Okay.
All right. So Darby's going to be back. He's going to be playing. How's he going to be playing?
Well, got to be careful how I say this, but let me just put it this way. He was very active during the parts of practice that we were allowed to watch today.
Like, okay.
21's out there.
All right. I mean, I want to ask questions. I don't know what you want to answer or what you don't want to answer. But
I don't know.
I mean, I could go further if you want me to.
Well, let's just play kind of an assumption game. If he's playing,
okay,
and Patrick Surtain is not coming off the field,
all right,
and Callahan's not coming off the field.
Well, then there's only one left, right? So if Surtain's not coming off,
well, you got to have Surtain and Simmons out there for Waller, right? Don't you have to have those two guys to cover this situation?
Well, I mean, I'll keep it real. If I were running the show right now and I was trying to figure things out, I would be looking at it like, who's the most frustrating player out there right now? And at the moment, there's been some frustrating plays from Fuller. Plain and simple. There's been some frustrating plays. Darby, I don't know if he's going to be better than Fuller or not, but Pat Surtain has not had any real issues. He's had a couple moments here and there, but nothing of real significance. The only defensive back that you would look to would be Fuller.
And Fuller's on a one-year deal. And, you know, you got a three-year deal with Darby. You're way more committed to Darby than you are to Fuller. I mean, you're obviously way more committed to Surtain. I mean, wouldn't we just be moving things just...
I guess I would be surprised, though. I mean,
isn't this the future?
Kyle Fuller is the number one corner on this team.
Well,
you know?
Is he?
Yeah, he is. That's what the finances would tell you.
Yeah.
Usually the finances tell you the story.
Yeah, but the second you drafted...
I'm not saying he's playing the best right now. Well, certainly I'm not saying that.
But the second you drafted Surtain, didn't you just put millions of dollars inevitably at one point or another on the bench?
Well, I think ideally you were going to play Darby and you're going to play Fuller, and Surtain was going to play in a reserve in the nickel and dime situations. He was going to get a lot of experience this year. It wasn't going to be a redshirt year because he was going to play a lot. And in the NFL, your nickel packages are really turning into your base packages. So I don't think that they were trying to put millions of dollars on the bench. It was more so that they were going to allow Surtain a year to develop.
I don't think Darby's going to play like every single play or anything like that, because I think they're going to try to work him back in. But I'm guessing that if there's some sort of rotation, it would be Darby with Fuller, not Darby with Surtain. It's a guess.
It makes sense to me. It really does. If you're just looking at the issues and you're looking at the guys that have had some moments where they got exposed, I haven't seen Surtain get exposed like I've seen Fuller get exposed.
So that's where I was going. How do you feel about that? If that's the case, how do you feel about it?
I'm okay with it. Yeah. I am. I want to get my best guys on the field. I, at this point, you don't really care about the finances. Hopefully, your finances match up with your best players. Fuller's still going to be a good player in the NFL, but he's not playing like he was last year.
Okay. And I know the Broncos don't necessarily match up, but don't you have to have Waller covered individually, specifically? I mean, don't you have to do something a little bit different with him?
It's really, really hard to line up one-on-one matchups with a tight end. That's just difficult to do. The scheme doesn't allow you to pinpoint who you want to put on that guy because they play inside the box, right?
Yeah.
And most of the time you got to have your linebackers. But if you want to go in lighter personnel, if you want to put Patrick Surtain inside the box, if you want to bring Justin Simmons down into the box, you can do these things. It's just more difficult to get a one-on-one matchup on the tight end.
But if we see Ruggs just running past everybody, like we saw Marquise Brown running past everybody, like we've seen other guys running past everybody, like we saw Juju running past people, that and it's Fuller they're running past, it's no good.
That's not good. No, that's not the way it was supposed to be.
So I think that's going to – we'll see. But don't be surprised.
All right.
Don't be surprised. It sounds like it's a good plan. Okay. Mike.
I'm looking forward to this, man.
Right?
This could be great.
Big story of the day. We'll talk to Mike Shanahan next.
Hey guys, Tyler Palumbus here to tell you about my new friends at Assignar. Colorado contractors get paid faster and save big time money with Assignar managing their construction operations. From instant crew and equipment scheduling to digital time tracking and forms, contractors using Assignar are averaging $30,000 per year in savings. Collect data from the field to make informed decisions from the office with Assignar platform and mobile app. Go to keepbuilding.com to request your free demonstration of Assignar and see how much your business can save.